Hey, this is Dr. Robert Glover, and today I have the great honor and pleasure of interviewing a colleague and friend of mine, David Hamilton. David is in the Denver, Colorado area. I'm in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico as we speak, so we're using the wonders of technology and the internet. So, David, good morning. Glad to have you with us for this interview.
Good morning. It's awesome to be here. What's up, everybody? Beautiful sunny day here. I feel the need to say that since you're in Puerto Vallarta.
and
it's not always cold in Colorado with a lot of sun.
Beautiful sunny day here.
I must say I am a little jealous.
So David and I are actually recording this interview. Today is Monday, the 20th of April, 2015. For those of you who might be listening to it a few days later or a few years later. So we're both blessed to have sunshine, and I can see David. He waved at you, even though you can't see it over the recording. So welcome to this interview, and we're calling this interview Stranger in a Strange Land. And the topic is going to be around a subject that David has done a shitload of work around himself on and done a ton of work with men and women, but a lot with guys in his own professional coaching career. And it's a subject that is the reason I invited David a few years back to develop and teach a course for me at TPI University called Authentic Social Influence, because David really is somebody who not only, you know, he didn't just go to school and study this stuff and became smart about it. He went out and worked on himself and became smart about it. So I'm a big advocate that every one of my teachers at TPI University is somebody who didn't just study this stuff, but has learned it through their own life experience and their own coaching and therapy practices. So again, thrilled to have David with us. And we've done a few interviews in the past, and I'm really excited about this one. And I'm calling it Stranger in a Strange Land, because so many of the men I work with, and I know this is true for you as well, David, don't feel like they fit in. Whether it's because they just socially feel awkward, or they're too shy to approach strangers or to assert themselves, or where they would prefer to be alone than be around other people, or even just talking to people freaks them out and makes them feel anxious. And then a lot of times they don't know how to make small talk. They don't know how to fit into groups. They don't know how to introduce themselves to somebody new. And it's almost as if an example I gave is like they grew up on another planet where they didn't learn the language or social cues that humans use on Earth. And often the outcome of that is they feel not only awkward, but they feel defective, that there's something wrong with them. And as you and I both know, that's the exact opposite of the truth. There's nothing wrong with these guys that you and I work with. So the premise of what we're going to talk about today revolves around three key concepts. And we've all heard these terms used, and I have to admit, I've mistakenly interchanged them in the past or used them synonymously, which is not correct. And I really became aware of this recently when I read a book that was recommended to me by a guy who attended one of my seminars. The book's called Quiet by Susan Cain. And the premise of the book is that we live in a culture that encourages and rewards extroversion. And her premise is that many of us are naturally born introverts. Our brains are just wired that way. It's our natural way of being in ourselves and experiencing the world. And the book talks about how we can use those own unique strengths and gifts of being an introvert in an extroverted world, or at least in a world that encourages extroversion. And she makes a point that maybe most of us really aren't all that extroverted. We just think we have to be. But here's a point that she made that really struck home. It's a simple point, that there's a difference between shyness, introversion, and social anxiety. They are three completely different brain type wirings, or three completely different personality types, manifestations. We may have all three. We may have one. We may have two. We may have a combination. We may have one more than the other, but they are distinctly different. So, David, here's where I'm going to toss the ball to you. We'll just get started with this. I'm going to ask you for a definition, at least in your terminology, your experience, your way of thinking, of each of those three personality types or traits: shyness, introversion, social anxiety. So start with shyness. What's your definition of shyness?
So shyness to me is when we have – situations and specific social situations where all of a sudden we get really self-conscious, we close up, we close in, and we sort of might disengage a little bit. Now, with shyness, it happens during the situation, and there's not a lot of thought beforehand about it. It's during the specific situation. It's not across the board.
Okay, so it's an experience we have internally then that tends to shut us down or make us feel self-conscious in the moment when maybe some kind of social interaction might be expected or required of us.
Yeah, well, a lot of times it's when we're in the – I would say all the time is when we're in the social situation all of a sudden or close to it. And when we get into social anxiety, I'm sort of refraining from talking about social anxiety right now on purpose because I know we're going to get to that. But it's in that situation. And yes, because our thoughts and beliefs and whatever and our wiring, however you want to say, that combination or whatever perspective we want to come from, those thoughts create those feelings and then the feelings and the behaviors manifest out from that.
So it may not be so much that we even feel anxious in that moment. Maybe we just feel somewhat reserved or withdrawn or not know what to say or how to fit in or how to take a risk of venturing into a conversation.
Yeah, I think there can be anxiety there, but I think you make a good point that there doesn't have to be necessarily anxiety. It could be just like a total kind of closing up and just like, oh, I don't know what to do. And they get small, but maybe they do or don't experience anxiety, though. I think sometimes definitely anxiety can be there.
And as we're going to talk about in all three of these, and I'm sure you've seen this, and I know as a parent, I believe that probably to a very large degree, most of these traits we're going to talk about are probably were genetically predisposed to be that way. Because you can see young children, young babies that pop out. Some are more outgoing and bold, and others are more reserved and passive. You can see young children. Some walk into a social situation and just own it at 3 years old, and others just sit on the sidelines, and their parents have to drag them into the social interaction. And so when I talk about guys feeling defective because, for example, of being shy, it isn't because they're defective. It's probably because that is just how they're wired. They probably inherited that trait of shyness from mom, dad, you know, some ancestors along the way. And we're going to do some Q&A. We've taken several questions from people that have taken the time to email you and me for this interview. And one of them that we'll talk about in just a few minutes is a guy says he blushes, that he's worked on that, breathing, calming himself, but he said he often still gets into social situations and out of the blue, he'll blush. It's a physiological response. Would you say that is actually a physical manifestation of shyness, that the blushing is kind of his body saying, oh, I'm kind of shy. I'm in the spotlight right now.
Yeah, blushing is a big one. People email me about all the time. Sweating, which can be different than an actual sweating kind of physical syndrome that isn't related to panic or shyness or social anxiety or whatever. But, you know, what I will say is too is that so much of, you know, the wiring, we can pop out a certain way, is so changeable with all the research on neuroplasticity, how we can change our brains through thoughts, through practices, through whatever. So I want to point to that, yeah, it's really good to be self-accepting and go, you know, this is how I am right now, because it doesn't help to beat up on yourself. However, as we both know as men, when it comes to being social, and especially sometimes an attraction with women, that confidence piece, right? That confidence piece. If somebody, guy is shy, man, you know, we got to work out the confidence piece. And it is shiftable and changeable. It's going to take different things for different guys at different levels, but it's completely changeable. And yeah, you know, we'll get into the introversion, how that can look differently, because there are plenty of guys that are quiet and confident, and there are guys who are more loud and gregarious and confident, a whole range.
Yeah, I like that you can be quiet and confident. And you and I both know we've worked with men who are inherently shy, but yet they've learned to embrace that about themselves, not let it limit them, and still learn how to be very socially active and very socially authentic and get what they want socially. Yeah, learn to do it. Maybe I even tell guys, hey, you know, if you see a woman you want to talk to, just walk up to her and say, "Hey, I normally don't do this because I'm a shy guy, but I just have to. I would have kicked myself if I didn't."
Which is so not shy, which is awesome.
But it's so true. But it's also such a great way of embracing and using the truth about you. Okay, you mentioned introversion. Let's go ahead and segue into introversion. Can you define what an introvert is and maybe contrast that with an extrovert for us?
Yeah, so the classic definition of introversion, which is one I like and use, is that an introvert recharges their energy when alone, and an extrovert recharges their energy around people. And typically, introversion, as Susan Cain talks about this, is confused with shyness or social anxiety. And people say, be more introverted, or they never say that, actually. They say, be more extroverted. Don't be as introverted. Yeah. It's a judgment on introversion. And that's incorrect. And so the first thing is, I always educate people on that. And that's why I call myself a social introvert, because I have shifted enough to where if I, I can be in the house all the time, do work, read books, and be fine. But I have gotten to a point where I start to feel a little stir crazy, because I also believe fundamentally we are built and meant to connect with each other. That's how we got here. However many billion, are we at 9 billion, 10 billion, 11 billion? I don't know, on planet Earth.
We'll just go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really up there. We got here by being social, technology, everything, community. It's all comes from being social and working together. So, which is the pain of shyness, social anxiety, is that deep down we do long for that, and then there's these blocks in the way of wiring and thought and whatnot. But that's a really important distinction to make with introversion, and not to at all judge yourself for being introverted. And I've noticed that, and it's a sliding scale. It's not introvert or extrovert, and Susan Cain will talk about that. And ambivert is in the middle, right? You're kind of both. And I think I've shifted to becoming a little more slightly more extroverted in a way, although I'm still an introvert, because of how I've changed.
So I can really relate to what you're talking about, David, because I know when I read Susan's book, it really hit home for me about the introversion. And ironically, even though I've always seen myself as a person who likes to connect and be around people, and I preach that to everybody I work with, and I even wrote a blog a couple of years ago called The Mayor of Puerto Vallarta, that one of my friends that came down to visit me says, "You know everybody in this town. You're like the mayor of Puerto Vallarta." But ironically, I am also an emotional introvert. And I don't think I discovered that till maybe the last, probably started noticing it the last 10 years of my life, when I got divorced about 12 years ago, began living alone, and started realizing how much I like to live alone, and how much I like to sleep in my own bed, and how much I like my own quiet time, be able to walk around my house with nobody there but me, and not have to negotiate anybody else. And it wasn't till this really hit home when my girlfriend Jerry and I started living together in close proximity two and a half years ago, and all of a sudden it was driving me crazy, and we actually broke up, and we both came to the realization, we each had our own issues about living together, but I realized as an emotional introvert I needed more alone time than I got living with a person. Now, after we got back, we actually got back together several months later, and I said, okay, if we're going to live together in the same house again, I have to have my own bed. I can't share a bed with you. I can't share a queen-size bed where all night long I'm emotionally negotiating how to share a bed with another person. I need my own bed. That's where I recharge at night by myself, alone in my own bed. She resisted it at first. We did it anyway. And then she got to where she actually loves having her own bed as well, because she found out she has some of those same qualities as an introvert of needing alone time to recharge so that she has the energy to go connect with people. And she's also social and works in retail, so she needs that alone time as well. So that was really insightful for me when I came to the realization, I'm an emotional introvert. I like people. I go work around people. I go to Starbucks to do my work, but I got to be alone to recharge my batteries and to not feel like I'm crawling out of my skin.
Yeah, absolutely. I so resonate with all that, especially the sleeping alone part too.
So let's talk about social anxiety. This to me is probably a little bit different animal than was. They're all different, but this one seems to stand out the most from introversion and shyness. So how would you define social anxiety?
So social anxiety is where someone has a general fear of pretty much all social situations. And I think a big differentiator between shyness is that there's fear of that when they're not in social situations, also known as anticipatory anxiety. Mm-hmm. At home, worrying about when I go out, when I have to be social, what will I say, what will I do, what will people think of me? Also, which happens when they're out in social situations, those thoughts are kind of constantly running, and they may be running consciously or subconsciously, and of course the anxiety is there along with it, with those kinds of thoughts.
And how might the anxiety be manifesting inside them physically and emotionally?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, tightness in the chest, physically, faster beating heart. We've got things like blushing that happen on the more extreme ends. So it doesn't happen for a lot. Shutting down behaviorally, stuttering, just getting real quiet, or not being able to speak, or having a look of terror on their face, or, you know, really in that fight or flight or freeze. And usually freeze is, I think, one of the more common, flight or freeze. Nobody gets really feisty with social anxiety, right? those are some of the basic ones that I see a lot of and have experienced myself.
And I will say, people who are not hardwired towards anxiety states, because there's some people that are just really calm and easygoing, and they have a hard time understanding people that have anxiety. And of course, anxiety can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And I believe, as a therapist and coach, both personal and professionally, I think some anxieties we've internalized because of life experiences, and we've avoided situations. And I see this a lot with nice guys. I see nice guy syndrome as primarily being an anxiety management syndrome, where everything we do or don't do is meant to manage anxiety. Sometimes those anxieties are the result of internalized thoughts and belief systems from when we're very young. And they often can be, again, we're genetically predisposed. We had one or more anxious parents, is how our brain is wired. Just like we're all physically different on the outside, every one of us physically different in terms of how our brain is wired. Similarities, but differences. Now, I like that you mentioned about the neuroplasticity, that we can learn things. And I know I have learned to soothe a lot of anxieties personally. I've learned to take action even though I feel anxious. I've learned to calm myself. But yet I can still see anxieties that, you know, just kind of creep up on their own, because I think that's how I'm naturally predisposed or wired, even though I've done a lot to manage that more effectively in my everyday life. So, but do you see this, for example, that when you have people that do maybe have this predisposed wiring for anxiety, that they do feel different or defective, and they're like, nobody else can really understand why, and they'll just say, well, just go do it. Just walk up and talk to them, or, you know, quit telling yourself all these bad things and just do it. And is not that simple, is it?
It's not that simple for somebody that has social anxiety. Definitely not. And the people are sort of... I had a consultation call the other day with somebody, and I said, look, they're right. Okay. When these people say that, they're actually right. It is much easier than we think, right? Or how it's currently patterned in our brain. But to somebody with social anxiety, there's no way to hear that come in, because they feel that person doesn't understand them. And so that's why they come to people like me or you, and because they feel, because we've gone through it. And it just doesn't compute. But the thing is that it still happens through thought on some level. So the association is in there, and it may be very unconscious or subconscious, but it's still in there. And to start to help people see that, I think, is a really huge part, because that, I believe, and have experienced, drives the emotions and behaviors and whatnot.
And I agree that even with the physical predisposition towards anxiety states, and by the way, getting rid of all anxiety is not particularly valuable either. I've read where they've done experiments on mice where they eliminate their amygdala, the part of their brain that triggers flight freeze. And these friggin' mice just walk off the side of tables and land on the floor and die, because they have no fear of anything. So some degree of anxiety is helpful. So we're not going to try to get rid of all of it. It can inform us in very important ways. But I like what you say. I would say the majority of the time when we're feeling anxious, feeling those physical responses, feeling whether it be dread, tightness in the chest, perspiring, heartbeat, anxiety, seeing stars, whatever it is we're experiencing, if we can take a breath and slow ourselves down, it does slow the mind down. And as the mind slows down, we can even ask ourselves, what's going on inside of me right now? And there is usually some thought process involved, and the thought process is triggering us physiologically, because the mind resides in the brain, and the brain is interconnected with every single cell of our body. And so when we are thinking in certain ways, it is going to trigger. So oftentimes, we're not trying to necessarily get rid of all anxiety, but a lot of what the work you and I do is helping people breathe, slow themselves down, be more present, more in the moment, and be the observer of their thought processes. And a lot of times we can consciously change the way we're thinking and therefore change the way we feel and react. And I know you do a lot of that kind of work.
Yeah, I do a lot of that work, kind of work, and I really shifted my approach even last year to really working with how the thought and how the awareness works in a way that is very simple and powerful for people, because I've worked with people, and as we know, just taking action and just doing the behavior can create a situation of what I call faked or forced confidence, where somebody can do it, but they feel horrible, and they'll never sustain in the long run with that unless we get the cognitive and mind piece and emotional piece sorted along with it. That's been my experience.
And they're not congruent either. And other people can really pick up on that. And I've got another friend and coach who works primarily with single guys about being congruent. And for example, it's okay to approach somebody and feel anxious, but if you're trying to pretend you're not anxious or repress it, the other person will read your meta language, your meta communication, body language, your speech, and they'll feel bad. They'll feel weird because you're trying to project one thing, but you're actually physically experiencing and therefore very unconsciously projecting something else. And then we can't realize why people don't want to be around us or get close to us. So again, as we've said, it's perfectly fine to be shy. It's perfectly fine to be introverted. It's perfectly fine to have social anxiety. We don't need to repress them, hide them, pretend they're not there. Let's embrace them, own them, and learn how to act anyway. You know, kind of like that, no matter what we feel, let's take action anyway and just own it. Be okay with the fact that, okay, I'm feeling anxious. You know, I always feel anxious, for example, before I start an interview like this. And I could tell you did too. When we first actually started talking, we kind of shared a few commonalities, you know, shared a few things with each other, told you about my tattoos. And that was a way for both of us to ease into the situation and soothe the anxiety we both had about doing this interview. So it's okay that we were anxious. It's normal that we were anxious, and we found ways to connect and move through the anxiety to where we could have this congruent moment together, working with each other and recording this interview.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I want to comment on that, because I really felt I wanted to connect with you because I felt like we were getting to work, and I don't recall having a lot of anxiety, but I do recall feeling a little bit like it was a little forced. So I was like, I just want to connect with you as a friend, and check in with you. And because we do work together and we're so busy, there are times where I notice that I can really get into work mode and just be all about work, and which I know starts to create a state of disconnection for me, which in the long run I don't prefer. I don't really want it, but I've also been practicing that, and I think it has been connected to anxiety. But I just want to point to that connection piece, because I think the connection is so important. It's what people with social anxiety really want to feel a lot. And a lot of times they're actually disconnected from themselves. And that's why it makes it hard to connect with others.
And I like what you said earlier, is that we're wired to connect. It is our genetic inheritance. Mother Nature wants us connecting. And our ancestors that connected passed on that genetic trait. The people who didn't connect died in a cave somewhere. And even as you were talking just now, and I'm watching you. So those of you that are listening to this, you, of course, just have the audio. David and I actually have video. We can see each other. And I even said at the beginning before we started recording, if we can, if we have good enough bandwidth, let's leave the video on so we can see each other. And I know that makes it easier for you and I to do our job of sharing back and forth. Just the fact that we can see each other. We can see each other's eyes, facial expressions, body language. And even though we may not always give a lot of credit to that, if we were recording this recording without the video on where we couldn't see each other, I don't think it would have near the quality that it does when we can see each other, because it enhances our connection and our ability to truly kind of have a vibe that connects with each other. And I just recording this, I get how important that is.
Yeah. Dang it. I thought we were doing the video. I was so excited for us to be seen connecting, but I guess not. Oh, well.
Oh, well. You would have had to move all the beer and alcohol bottles from behind you there that I can see on the video. So,
And there's a book there too, but there is. No,
there's a book up there. We know how David gets his social courage. So, okay, let's talk just a minute about your course, Authentic Social Influence, a 4-week online course. And I'm going to ask you a very specific question about it. And then I want to take some questions, because I really want to dive into some of the questions people asked. You developed this course, I don't remember now, 3-4 years ago, I think, right around the time I first launched drglover.com. And it's been a very successful course. And the reason that you and I agree to be a good course is that so many men we come across do have some degree of shyness, introversion, social anxiety, and it affects their ability to get what they want in life, both in their careers, relationship, sex, even just their emotional well-being and physical health. It all gets affected by it. And so you've built this course, taught it several times now. I know you keep evolving it every time. And I know the thing that you like most about, I'm going to call it teaching the course, but you see yourself as more of a coach rather than a teacher. And you're a very good teacher. But I know you really like taking people's where they're at in their current situation and working from there in a coaching kind of experience with them. And you do that in this course. And we built the course. In fact, your feedback on how you like to interact with people in the course actually has gone a long way to help me keep evolving how we do all our courses at TPI University. And we've added a thread where people get to ask you very specific questions, and you can answer those on a forum very directly. We also have a live Q&A session that's much like what you and I are doing now, where class members can ask you very specific questions. You can kind of dive in, find out what's going on with them, where they're getting stuck. Is it a shyness issue? Is it an introversion issue? Is it a social anxiety? Is it a thought talk issue? Is it a lack of skills issue? You can really dig down and help people get what they need. This is more than just them reading a few lessons going, okay, I'll try to be more outgoing. You really do coach. You get very hands-on. So with that said, let me ask you basically three questions in the guise of one. After a guy finishes this course, and we do direct this course at men, after a guy finishes this course, if he's fairly shy, if he's inherently shy, how would you say he would probably be different after finishing the course? If he's naturally introverted, how would you say he could expect to be different after finishing the course? And or if he's has social anxiety, how would you say he would expect to be different after finishing the course? So let's just start with shyness.
Yeah, I mean, with shyness, you know, the course is a really good fit because it's only in specific situations. So we do mindset stuff, we do skill set stuff. It's a very, very action-based course. So you have to be comfortable with being able to take some form of action, I would say, for sure. And other things that I do, it's not required, but this course for sure. So the shy guy could really come in there, work on those specific situations where he's shy, and then come out of the course with the possibility of having overcome those. Yeah, that's what I'd say about the shyness one.
Okay. How about introversion then?
For the introvert, I mean, there's no problem. There's nothing wrong with being introverted at all. There's nothing wrong with all of it, of course, when we work with it. But, you know, I'm a social introvert. I can't really change how I recharge my energy in that overall sense. So, you know, there's one part in the course where I really focus in on how do we manage as an introvert being social. I actually really drill into that specifically to help the guy who thinks that his introversion is holding him back or feels that it is.
Yeah, and like we both said, we're both naturally introverted, but we're both very social people. I see the adventure in life comes from being around people. I often say I love waking up in the morning not knowing how my day is going to end. And I found if I just stay in the house all day, I pretty much do know how my day is going to end. But if I get out around people, it makes all the difference in my life. But I also know to do that, I've got to consciously go recharge my batteries alone. And, you're very much the same way. Okay, how about social anxiety? I know authentic social influence is not how do you quit being social anxious course. But let's say somebody does have social anxieties and maybe they avoid social contacts, or when they do get into them, they freeze or they panic or they run away or they get their brain shuts down. How might somebody with social anxiety expect to be different after taking authentic social influence?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I also think there's probably a spectrum between social anxiety and shyness, right? So okay. I want to address that, because the reason I want to say that is that if somebody has really extreme social anxiety, this is going to be a really tough course. I'm just going to be honest about that.
Because you challenge them to get out around people, right? And interact in very specific ways with people.
Oh, absolutely. Tons of exercises, group support, Q&A forum with me, all that, lots of action-based stuff, including how to invite, create your own event and be a leader, a social leader more, and persuasive and all this kind of stuff. So extreme is probably going to be really tough. Moderate or mild, the course could be a really good fit, because moderate or mild, I've found, are usually willing to take some kind of action and really mm-hmm. challenge themselves in that way. So, and I'd encourage people, if they're okay with it, to push their comfort zone a little, not too much, because if we do it too much, then we get into the danger zone and then we're just going to collapse in and not do anything.
Yeah.
But I would say extreme, not really, and moderate or mild probably would be a good fit. And the possibility is to have overcome some of that social anxiety, and definitely to have upgraded your skill set and your mindset as well.
And as you and I both know, the more you practice something, it doesn't even mean you have to be that good at it, but just doing it, practicing it, builds a sense of confidence, does build a sense that you can do it, even if it makes you anxious. Yeah. And I know various things in my life, like taking salsa lessons, it made me extremely anxious. But every time I went and did it and completed a class, the next time I was about to go and I was anxious again, I said, but I've done it before. I can handle it. And so I like that what you do, and I encourage this really in all my courses at TPI University, my tagline is putting intention into action. And you really do encourage people to take action. And whether you're introverted, shy, or have social anxiety, your issues will get triggered in different ways when you take action. And as you say, if it's too extreme, you shut down. I call that the stress mode. Our goal is not to get into stress mode. Our goal is to get into stretch mode and get out of comfort mode, where we tend to avoid things because they make us uncomfortable, stretch ourselves consciously, and then listen to the chatter that comes up, the self-limiting beliefs, the noise in our head, and learn to work with that and educate ourselves from that. But we have to stretch ourselves to do it. And I know when I work with people that are either shy or introverted or socially anxious, usually they say, well, it's so much easier for everybody else. That's kind of the excuse they give. And I always say, you know what? Every person I know, whether they are or aren't any of those things, if they're growing as a human being, it's not easy. They're stretching themselves in some way. So don't use that as an excuse. There's no getting away with saying, well, it's easier for some people to start a conversation, or it's easier for some people to put themselves in social situations and lead. Yeah, maybe it is. But everybody has to challenge themselves in some way if they're going to grow as a person. So the guys that take your course are going to spend a lot of time in their stretch zone. And it won't always easy, but it is doable.
That's right. Absolutely. And just, I want to make a comment on that, because I feel really compelled to, is that thought that it's easier for them. Yeah, it might be true, but that actual thought is part of the social anxiety state of mind or mindset. It's actually part of it happening right in the moment. So that's what people really have to start to take a look at, how this is everywhere in their life, probably when they have social anxiety.
Yeah. And I call that our inner, self-limiting belief, or even our own inner bullshit that says, well, it's easier for other people, so I'm not going to do it. Okay. I have never done anything in life that meant anything that was easy. Everything I've done that meant anything scared the shit out of me. But you know what? That's okay. That's how we grow.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me just say this for people listening to this interview. David's course, we offer it every several months at TPI University. You may be listening to this right now, and we're just about to start it today. On April 20th, 2015. If you're listening to this after the fact, just go to my website. Actually, if you downloaded this interview, you are actually already at my website, drglover.com, and just go over to the calendar on the sidebar till you find Authentic Social Influence. Click on it. It'll tell you the date of the next course. And I said, we do it every few months at TPI University. And so I want to take a few minutes now, because when I advertised a couple of days ago that we're going to do this interview and record it, I invited people to send us some questions relating to the subject. And I have probably 8 or 10. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge you. I've got my timer in front of me, and I have it set for 2 minutes. I'm going to read a question and then hit the timer. You got 2 minutes or less to answer it. So we're going to do a little you know what? I'm going to make it a minute. I'm going to really challenge you. 1 minute. Okay.
But now I'm anxious, Robert.
I love it. I'm doing this just to amp your internal anxiety.
I'm down. Let's go, baby. Let's do it.
All right. So some of the questions may take me longer than a minute to read, but I'm going to hit the timer on each one.
You admit it. Okay.
Life isn't fair. You know that. Okay. This is from Thomas. Thomas writes, I'm surely struggling with the mentioned traits to a certain extent, but I'm often able to overcome them. But that is the question. Doing so is really exhausting to me. After a few hours of intense social interaction, I feel completely depleted of energy. Any suggestion on how to overcome this? As I have the feeling, I just cannot be like the others, as I simply don't have the energy. So even if I'm outgoing, assertive, etc., it doesn't work, as I'm done after a few hours and just can't keep that behavior up for a longer period of time. Okay, you got a minute? What's your answer?
Two things that stick out at me. The first is to manage your introversion, because I'm sure you're an introvert. And the second thing is all the thoughts that I'm different and that I don't have energy. It's really tricky, because we can turn those things that happen into limiting thoughts. We can turn introversion, we can turn anything into a limiting thought. Our minds are that powerful. So we really have to pay attention to that, because it also sounds like maybe there's some behavioral forcing going on, and he's not so aware of how his thoughts are going to make him tired, because he has all these beliefs that he's different. And of course, it's going to shut him down, make him more tired, make him more closed off. Ask me how I know. I've experienced it and worked with a lot of people like that.
Hey, man, you did great. You had 13 seconds left. So I like what you said, that part of it is he's just introverted. So, of course, his battery runs dry when he's around social. But I also like what you added to that, that if we're having a lot of chatter, negative self-talk going on in our head, that's going to wear us down too, because that it is. There's a lot of emotional energy that gets wrapped up in those thoughts. All right, I like that. Okay, next question. Actually, this guy asked two questions, but we'll take them one at a time. And again, it's going to take me longer than a minute to read it, but that's okay. Stephen says, I've embarked the last few years to try to speak to everyone and have learned the importance of taking the room, setting an open and positive interaction, even on errands. This has been surprising for someone who is extremely socially awkward. Many are surprised that I'm an introverted nerd at heart, and then I tell them. This also helps me and helps others to touch little typo here, the world in a small way during the mundane execution of the human condition. I like that. He's out there connecting with people, making the world different just by doing it. Then he goes, still, I feel like I was wasting time when I spend a long time at a dinner or away from home a good bit with no tangible output. So here's question number one. So I guess, and I could relate to that, and a lot of people tell me this. So go, well, I feel like I'm wasting time when I'm making small talk, or wasting time if I'm just, you know, chatting with people at dinner. I could be at home surfing the internet and looking for video cameras that I'm not going to buy. That would be more productive, right? But that's what introverts, I know, tend to feel a lot. They're wasting time when they're being socially interactive. But here's question number one. How do I balance the advantage of introversion to spend significant time reading, doing, and contemplating without compromising or feeling like I am compromising my time? I think the way is to budget time for each. So what are your thoughts about that, about budgeting alone time and social time as a way of honoring the fact that he's introverted?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great thing to do. Go ahead and do it. There's no problem with that. Budget it. For me, I do it more intuitively. I can feel it, so I know it. But if you want to budget it, go for it, man. Sounds good.
Yeah, because you can't feel it. You know when your battery's starting to get drained, all of a sudden you don't feel as much like interacting. You start feeling tired, fatigued. You start thinking about other things, don't you?
Yeah, you and one thing, too, is I'm just going to say that question, I had to, like, think about it really hard. So I think there's just a little too much thinking going on right here. Because if our mind settles down, like, a lot of times we're in a certain state, we're like, how do I do this? It's like, calm down, don't worry, and let it work itself out intuitively. Like, we have the capacity to not think in the future and just intuitively be guided by our own wisdom, our own knowledge.
All right. I think timer just went off. I took some of your time, but we're going to keep moving. So what you're saying could be that maybe even he overthinks it a little bit, which he wouldn't be the first man I've worked with that didn't overthink things a little bit. Good company, exactly. In a social setting around people who are naturally very social, they take over. I relax and sit back, but when I speak up, it is often as if I said nothing. No response. Have I just not established social relevance? And does that mean I have to go through the exhausting process of trying to compete with Mr. Super Social? Can you relate to this one, David?
Absolutely. I struggled with this a lot as a kid because I had a lot of friends who were in drama, actors, and so I would say stuff sometimes and feel like I wasn't heard. So I think there's a certain amount of presence that can be cultivated. This sounds like because he's saying something, but it could be how and the way he's coming across and body language and energy that changes everything. And being present and being able to connect with people, but also have a certain presence. It's hard to put into words, I think, it sounds like what's going on to me here.
And David, one of the things I really encourage guys when I work with them is to blurt. And I'm a big advocate of blurting. And because what happens with a lot of guys I work with, going back to the overthinking things, they're in a social situation, maybe talking to a woman, and they think about something to say, and then they think about it and think about it some more, and then rehearse it in their head. And by the time they say it, conversation's moved on, and it's lost its timing, it's lost its relevance. But blurting is a great way. So, all right, timer's going off. You quit talking, I'll jump in on it. I'll take a little bit of time. This is from Sean. He says, when in a social situation, I try to relax and put into practice the advice I've learned. But I always blush. It's so intense. All practice and prep is lost. So what would you say about the blushing in this context?
Yeah, there's a lot in there. And so blushing is a symptom. Trying to control blushing is like trying to control your heart rate by literally thinking, okay, heart rate, go down to 65. Slow down, heart rate. It doesn't work like that. So, and I empathize with his blushing issue. I used to blush too. And so even the thoughts about there's thoughts about the blushing. What will happen with the blushing? Well, that's already setting up the blushing. There's also the idea that you need to be prepped. See, the prep is so, prep is good if you literally don't know what to do. But everybody keeps wanting more prep and more rehearsal, and it becomes a crutch because the state of mind and mindset is so much more important. And so we need to look at that part, how that part is generating this whole thing all the way down the line into the blushing. And I'm sure there are other things there as well. So got to look at the thought, the belief, the underlying things we can shift, all those associations that are setting this up. Mm. So the blushing just happens because the association's there and he's not even seeing it, but it just, the image, I'm sure there's images in his mind. There's all kinds of things that he may or may not be aware of that are going to like trigger it. And it's something I used to deal with that I used to blush a lot. And then the more I worked on this, the more it just stopped happening.
Okay. I remember my very first psychology course. This was like day one, psychology 101 in college. And was interesting. It was a Christian college. And so day one, the psychology teacher says, I got a $20 bill here, and I'll give this $20 to the first guy that can will himself to have an erection.
Yeah, nice.
And he did it to make a point that whether we're talking about erections, sweating, blushing, certain things, they're part of our nervous system that we don't control just by thinking, I want to blush or not to blush. I want an erection, don't want an erection. They happen because they're wired to happen. Yeah. This guy's a blusher. And you know, as you said, he's given himself negative messages about blushing as if blushing is going to create a negative social vibe for him. But you know, I've been in social, I mean, I took debate in high school. I was a preacher for 8 years. I teach course. I've been speaking in front of people forever. And I've had lots of bad things happen to me that I recovered from. But every now and then in a social situation, I'll blush when something kind of hits close to home. And my experience is because I'm usually projecting so much confidence, the people around me absolutely love it. When I blush, they'll go, you're blushing. And there's a part of me that thinks, oh, that's bad. They're making fun of me, but they're not. They're joining with me. They're seeing a side of me that they don't see a lot, and they really like it. They're connecting with me as a more human person. I've learned now to just go with that when I blush, I'll be playful with it. I might even exaggerate, you know, a little bit of you know, the situation. And it's a way people that I actually – because I can be so controlled at times and people say, well, you're so controlling, I can't get close to you. You know, my mother tells me that. When I could have that blush is people go, oh, I really like that you that can blush here. Yeah. So
I think that's a huge thing that you pointed out is to go with it, because the worst thing we can do is resist it and get more embarrassed, and to go with it is like the perfect solution when it happens.
Just go with it, ride it, surf it, ride that wave and have fun with it. Be playful. That's one of the best ways I know to connect with people. Be playful.
That's right.
All right, we got two questions left. Next one is from Kevin. And this one's a little bit maybe more involved question, but I'm going to still keep us to 1 minute. My question is, how would you and David, addressing it to me, recommend building rapport and connection within a group as compared to just an individual? I tend to really dive back into my old self and become the shy, introspective, quiet guy when a larger group of people are involved. And I think this may be pretty common as well, that some people maybe are not so shy one-on-one, but become more shy when they're in a little bit bigger group, even maybe more anxious. So what would you answer them as to how to move from being able to do this one-on-one to be able to do it more effectively within a group of people?
Well, I think one of the best ways is not to think of it as a big group of people. And I hear some of that in there. It's like, here's a big group, and it's so different because it works from the inside out. It's the thoughts about how the group is different. My experience is, somebody can come in and be like life of the party, but that tends to be the big extroverted way. The extroverts are good at that, tend to be, not all. The way is to think of it as one or two people at a time. It's really not that much different. Than connecting one-on-one in a sense. It feels different, and there's different energy in the room, so it's different in that sense, but we got to look at how the mind is making it different, how our minds are. And, you know, usually if I come up to a group, I'm going to talk to one or two people and introduce myself. I'm not going to go, hey, guys, what's up, group? It's like, and if it's a loud bar, it takes so much energy to do that, and it's actually out of the norm. The norm is to start conversations with one or two people or a little bit. And then you just and what'll happen is they'll naturally start to introduce you, most likely. You don't have to worry about all this stuff.
Or other That's people will join in. Yeah. Good. Hey, man, That's you right. hit that right at a minute. I'm impressed. You're getting good. All right, we got one question left. This is from Joe. And I like this question. It's to the point. How can one relate to people that are skittish and easily bewildered or put off?
Oh, this is a like reverse question. We got to have compassion and understanding. I don't know if this guy experiences shyness or social anxiety, whatever. But
I know Joe. I've worked with him. He's very outgoing. He's almost comedic. He almost has a great comeback, or you know, a little bit of sarcasm in almost everything he says or does. He's almost like he's on stage all the time.
Right. So maybe he's actually asking this from that place. I mean, it's to have the compassion and all that for him, especially if it's a girl that could be shy or socially anxious that he likes or is attracted to. We have to have the compassion for those people and really take it slower and not try to push too much. And, you know, if we're asking questions they're not answering or this or that, or to force it, because they are where they're at. We can't, you know, and maybe we just have to let it go. You know, it's like, what's our agenda? And there's so much more abundance out there of connections and people that we should just maybe move on.
Okay. Timer. All right. And I was thinking while you were talking, because when we've talked before, we've talked about family issues. Maybe he was talking about family members. You know, how do I relate to you know, my family when they're all bewildered and put off? And so, you know, when I read the question, it struck me as a question I get a lot from guys in my dating courses. Like, well, how do you approach a woman who has her headphones on? Or how do you approach a woman who's talking on the phone or Facebooking? Or how do you approach, or how do you deal with women who are shy and don't want to talk to you? And I often say, well, number one, what is your attachment to outcome here? And I think you kind of basically said Absolutely. The same thing. And why are you trying to push through something that isn't organically and naturally happening? And I think if I was with somebody that seemed like every time I said something to them, they seemed like bewildered or confused or put off, I'd just realize that, oh, I don't think we connect very well. And I'm not sure I would work that hard at it. And I'd probably go find other people I connect with more naturally, instead of like trying to push through something that for whatever reason, and don't even try to figure it out. That's another thing we do. We try to analyze this shit to death. Why are they bewildered? Or why are they withdrawn from here? Why? I don't know why, but it is. So I'm not going to work that hard at it. Now, I'm not going to, as you say, I like the fact of having compassion, but maybe just say, okay, we just don't connect for whatever reason, and move on, because there's a lot of people you will connect with. Like you say, a lot of people out there to connect with.
That's right. That's how I'd approach it. Absolutely.
David, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to do the little interview and help educate us about shyness and introversion and social anxiety. Thanks for taking the time to tell us about authentic social influence, and for actually putting that course together and teaching it. I know you're changing the world by the way you work with these guys, by helping them, you know, get up every day, and they get to make a difference in the world because they're more social, like that, like one of the questions the guy commented on, that I feel like I'm making the world a better place by being more social. And I've always thought that as well, personally, that when I engage with people, I'm making the world a better place. And thank you for taking the time to answer questions from our listeners. And as I said, if anybody wants to know more about authentic social influence, just go to my website, click on the link there. There's a link there for connecting with David if you want to connect with him personally and perhaps talk about coaching that he does and his other programs, because this isn't the only thing that he does in life, but it is a really important thing. So, David, thanks again for being with us today. Thanks again for teaching and coaching authentic social influence and making the world a better place for men and women alike. So thank you. Have a great day. And as I said, for everybody listening, if you want to know more about the things that David does, just go to my website and check out Authentic Social Influence.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Always an honor and a pleasure. And I look forward to working with the guys inside the course that it's a real fit for. Thanks, Robert.
All right, David, thanks a lot. And those of you that took the time to download and listen to this and get all the way to the end of it, thank you as well. And I hope, whether you take a course or not, that just listening to this has helped you be more accepting of yourself, understand yourself a little bit better, and maybe given you a few clues of where you can stretch yourself, get out of your comfort zone, and keep growing and challenging as a person. So again, thanks for listening. Have a great day, and hopefully we'll get to join with you guys again soon.